Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight for a discussion of The Expendables 3 by my favorite washed-up has-beens, Mark Ahn.
How's it going? I'm wearing my stonewashed jeans, because I'm feeling old and nostalgic.
And Adam Foss.
Here's my lucky ring.
Nice. That is the ugliest ring. Like, I would demand that he take it back.
I know.
Anyway.
It's a glove. It's not a ring.
If this is your first time hearing our podcast, you should visit our website at fthismovie.net. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie. Like our page on Facebook. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Find us in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie. If you like the show, if you're a fan, if you want to support us, please take the time to leave a review. We always appreciate it. And fairly new now, you can hear us on Stitcher if you're somebody who uses the Stitcher podcast app. Now we are available on Stitcher. Woo, that was a mouthful. So, like 4 years ago, Mark, you and I did the first Expendables.
And it wasn't a mistake.
And then, like the franchise itself, our roster expanded
for
the Expendables 2.
It really did.
And we brought on Growing Up Nerdy's Adam Thaz, Fridays at FThisMovie.net.
Yes.
And so now I'm excited to have the whole team back for Expendables 3.
Yeah.
All we're missing? Kelsey Grammer.
We probably should get a plane.
We also need a UFC or MMA fighter.
Or three.
Do you know one?
Maybe cast for acting talent first, boys. Okay, so listen, we're going to talk about Expendables 3. We'll talk spoiler-free for a little while, and then we will get into spoilers. But before we do, Mark Ahn.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen a lot of things lately. Some of them are good.
All right.
I'll just pick a couple, because... You know, I want to hear what Adam, actually, I'm very curious about what Adam has been watching lately.
He's been pimping this for a few minutes.
Yeah, he says, like, hey, I've been watching a lot of stuff. Okay, one movie I wanted to talk about is Locke, which came out with Tom Hardy. It came out
earlier this year.
I don't remember exactly when. Not amazing, but good. I really liked it.
I read an article earlier this week that said it was the best movie this year that no one saw.
That could possibly, you know what, that there's some traction.
I agree with the no one saw it part,
yes.
Only because I didn't see it.
Oh, okay. No, I would agree with that. I think Under the Skin would have been one of those movies too, but I think that's been getting a lot of attention, which is good because I like that movie a lot too, and I know we've been talking about it on the site and some other things.
So. Yeah.
Locke is really good. It's not... I mean, it's just basically Tom Hardy in a car talking on a phone the entire time. So it's not like super action packed, but it's super interesting. Just
not super action packed, but sort of action packed.
And by action packed, I mean a guy like talking on the phone.
Sometimes he like dials really fast.
Yeah. Sometimes he puts his hand on his forehead.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, Are you there? Okay, I went through a tunnel.
Other times,
I thought I lost
he
you.
Puts both of his hands on the wheel.
Oh, 10 and 2. That's good.
Yes.
Does he, like, tie the phone on a string and is, like, waving it above his head?
No, that would be great.
He really should be going hands-free.
Yes.
It's safer.
It is safer. Well, I don't know. It's set in England. I don't know what they do. They drive on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah, good point.
I'm not totally sure. It's really good. Tom Hardy.
Sorry, the right side of the road, Gabby.
Yeah, yeah. He's... oh, it's a shout-out. Across the pond. And he's really good in it. And he's just playing a guy and his life is making... I don't want to give anything away, but people should watch it. A guy whose life is sort of changing. And it's like the night he has to be in the car because he's traveling to somewhere. And his life is like irrevocably being changed that night for lots of different reasons. Which I won't get into, but it's totally worth watching. What else did I want to talk about? I finally caught up with Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yes. How is that? I really want to see it.
I know we talked about that earlier before. It's really kind of cool.
Okay.
I really like it. I've never seen a Jim Jarmusch movie until that one.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's like the wrong place to jump into Jim Jarmusch.
I could give you like five to watch.
Okay, cool.
And like two to skip.
I'll take all of them. That's
okay.
Fine.
Okay. I'll watch Ghost Dog. I think you would love Ghost Dog.
Oh, yes. I saw Ghost Dog.
Okay, then you've seen one.
Okay, I'm sorry. but it's super cool. Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston are in it, and they play, for those of you who don't know, they play vampires, but it's not like normal vampire stuff. They're just sort of living their lives in kind of cool ways. Tom Hiddleston's a musician. Tilda Swinton's a... I don't know what she is. It's unclear what she is in the movie. But it's worth checking out. The music's fantastic. It's kind of moody and cool, and I would highly recommend it for anybody who wants to watch it. I really, really like it.
Is that out on DVD now?
It's soon. I caught it. I rented it online. I forget which. So place. It's but it's supposed to be out on DVD or Blu-ray pretty soon, I think.
I read the funniest tweet about Tilda Swinton, and I'm going to mess up the wording, but it was something to the effect of, like, this person was wondering if in between movies, he just imagines her in between movies in a wedding dress walking into the sea. I don't know. I don't know why that struck me so funny.
What's funny is that I imagined it the other way around, that she walks out of the sea.
Well, she would have to for the next movie, so it makes sense.
Okay. So Only Lovers Left Alive, Locke, what was the last one? Oh, I saw Philip Seymour Hoffman's last movie, which is...
Something Dangerous Man. A Most Dangerous Man.
A Most Wanted Man. What is up with movie titles?
Not Most Wanted with Keenan Ivory Wayans. Different one.
Yes.
Different movie. Different. Got it.
What is up with movies with very generic titles lately? It makes it difficult to do. So, A Most Wanted Man, which is one of those slow burn spy, like really spy thriller. Not like James Bond spy thriller.
I know, but I got a Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy vibe off of it. I was not a fan of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
No, I wasn't either. And it's the same, it's based on the same books by John le Carré.
Oh, okay.
And so it's the same like tone and speed, but I liked it better because I think it just made more sense. Like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy was so just, it didn't make any sense. And I think that was the point. Like, look, spoilers for
this is Tinker complicated. Tailor,
Look, spying is really hard, people. Right. We're like, that's great. Why did you take 3 hours to tell me that?
Yeah. It's hard for James Bond too, but he does some cool shit.
Right. At least he blows some things up. And it's that, so it's that kind of spy movie. I don't think there's one shot fired in the entire movie.
Nice.
So just, I mean, just so people know.
Was there any sex?
No.
It's completely a boring spy movie.
It's about actual.
It's like actual, right? Actual
political,
not movie spies
stuff. Who's the director? I know Spies had it so cool.
I don't remember who directed it.
It's Anton Corbin.
Oh yeah.
So who did the American?
Some Red Hot Chili Peppers videos.
Yeah, I like the American actually.
I still haven't seen it.
You should watch it. It's a lot like this one. It's quiet. There's not a lot of dialogue.
I've had it on Blu-ray for probably 2 years and I still have not watched it.
I think it's worth watching.
Every time I'm about to put it in, I'm like, nah, I should probably watch Rush Hour 2
again. I'm
going to
put Chronicles of Riddick.
Exactly.
Here it goes. So that's it. That's all I wanted to
talk about. Alright, so you brought the art film pretentiousness.
I'm sorry,
so
everyone.
Let me swing it over to Adam Thug.
There's no pretentiousness
some,
here.
For some garbage. No, we get the full spectrum. Yeah. I like this.
I'll talk about the one mainstream movie.
Okay.
I watched Divergent.
Okay.
I haven't seen it.
Nor have I.
Okay.
It's not very good.
Nah.
I don't know why. She's probably a very nice person, but Shailene Woodley, is that her name?
Yeah.
She annoys me. I don't know why.
Oh my gosh. Adam Riske is going to punch you in the face.
His head is exploding.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of her, but that's fine.
You're about to go to war. You have no idea.
You are why she got cut out of Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Yes.
Clearly. By the way, best career move she ever made.
it's not great, and you can't help but watch it and draw comparisons to The Hunger Games, because they're very...
Just the fucking trailer for whatever we saw today, The Maze Runner. Just start calling it Young Adult the Movie, because they're all the same goddamn movie.
Yeah, the only thing that I will say about... I'm just going to say this about Divergent, being somebody who teaches, like, young kids... There's kind of a message in there that, you know, okay, maybe this is a message that some kids should hear.
Okay.
But besides that, the movie's not good.
Yeah, but the good news is it's like 2.5 hours long, right?
Yeah.
So that's great. At least you get in and out quickly.
Yeah, well, I got to watch it on my iPad, so, you know.
Oh, good.
I gotta go.
Watching it in 15-minute increments.
Yeah.
All right, so besides Divergent.
Okay, so I was just... telling you guys, I decided on Netflix, I've watched a ton of movies, and I decided I'm going to go and watch everything Chuck Norris has
On Netflix.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would argue with you about that decision.
Yeah,
I think everyone would say that's a good idea.
I might argue it.
No, you know what? You would think it's a good idea until you actually watch Chuck Norris's movie.
This Chuck Norris irony bullshit.
No, it needs to stop now.
It's out of control. He has... two good movies. I'm thinking of two.
I hated all.
What are the ones that stood out?
They all start to run together.
Well, sure they do.
Yeah, like the Octagon is garbage.
Yeah, okay.
It's a terrible movie. Good Guys Wear Black.
Never saw it.
Awful.
Okay.
It's terrible. Delta Force, not good.
Delta Force is not my least favorite.
But here's the thing with Delta Force. Delta Force is...
it's barely a Chuck Norris movie.
Yeah, it's not really Chuck Norris. And when he's in it, it's actually kind of fun.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like...
yeah, there's a lot of stuff on the plane, and, like, Robert Forster playing a terrorist. And although I will say, if you ever do watch the Delta Force, good luck getting the theme song out of your head for the rest of your life. Because I just walk around humming that theme all the time.
While you're making waffles.
That's right.
Folding laundry.
It's my waffle making music.
When you're watching Delta Force, like there was at least, there was a moment where you're like, you see Chuck Norris actually be an action hero. Like there was one moment where like he's on a motorcycle, goes through the window and kicks a terrorist in the head.
Yeah.
Like on the motorcycle. I was like, that's what I would like to see. This complete campiness, like... awesome, you know, God, his movies are terrible. It needs to stop. This Chuck Norris love needs to stop.
Adam Thoss of this movie.
Delta Force is a Canon production directed by the head of Canon, Menachem Golan, who just passed away last week. So I'd like to pretend that you watch Delta Force in his honor.
No, I'm sorry. No, I feel
it's okay.
Bad.
No, you're not speaking ill of the dead. The movie's not great. Did you ever see Code of Silence? I don't think it's on Netflix.
No, I have not seen
it. It's the best Chuck Norris movie. He's just a Chicago cop. It was directed by Andrew Davis, who later made The Fugitive. It's actually really solid. And that, I think, is the closest to being a good Chuck Norris movie. The other one is Invasion USA, which is on the other end of the spectrum. It's total bonkers trash, but it's also fun.
Okay, see, that's what
those
I
are
want.
The two that I would see, because the rest have almost always left me cold.
Yeah, they're just not good. And
Lone Wolf McQuaid, was that on there?
No, that one's not on
there. It's not very good either.
It's just, for a guy who is like a karate champion, there's very little fighting in some of these.
And he has no charisma.
No.
He's a terrible actor.
He's a block of wood.
He really is. Yeah. And then the fighting doesn't make up for it, you know? Like,
it's a fighting block
Scott of wood. Scott Adkins is not the best actor in the world. Sure. I would argue that he's the most handsome.
Yes.
because when he starts kicking ass, it's like, I don't care if he's the worst actor in the world. This is the coolest shit I've ever seen.
Yes, it is.
So what else besides Chuck Norris?
Well, and then if anybody has gone through this where they start watching upwards of 30 movies in a month on Netflix, you start getting into the bottom of the barrel of just the worst. And I watched Musketeers Forever, starring Lee Majors and Michael Dudikoff.
How did you even find this movie?
Oh my god, because I was watching American Ninja.
You went down on Michael
Dudikoff. Yeah, so now I'm typing in Michael Dudikoff.
And the internet sucked you in.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, Lee Majors, this is how bad? Oh my god.
What a weird question, Lee Majors, how bad could this be? Why would you ever type in Michael Dudikoff? So talk about American Ninja.
American Ninja is great.
Yeah.
American Ninja is a lot of fun. It's everything you want in '80s, like an '80s action movie to be. There's ninjas. They're all different colors.
What country are they from mostly?
Oh God, I don't think they really tell you. It's just
that was a joke. The title's American Ninja, so I assume you know they're from America. It's fine. I'll hold your hand through this.
They're from Chicago.
Midwest. Damn it, I missed the joke.
Midwest Ninja.
Chicago Ninja.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I'll stop there. I'll stop there.
All right, I'll talk about three real quick. They're all over the place. I was very, very sick yesterday, so I was able to lay down and try to watch some movies also on Netflix. I watched some garbage that I won't talk about, but I did, for the first time ever, see Anatomy of a Murder. The Otto Preminger movie, I want to say it's like 1959,
okay.
Jimmy Stewart. It's like almost 3 hours long, so that's why I was like, well, when else am I going to watch this, except for when I'm incapacitated? It's really good. What else can I say? Jimmy Stewart is the man. I have a feeling if it wasn't him in the lead, I wouldn't have been as invested, but man, he's just the best. It's a weird movie because it's not a weird movie, but it's very much just sort of a legal procedural.
Sure.
And it's very well done. And I remember Doug and I, a long time ago, did a podcast on A Few Good Men, and I kind of criticized A Few Good Men in some ways for not really having any kind of surprises. It's always like, this is what we're going to do, and then that's what they do. Yeah. And it's like, so where's the drama in that? And this movie does that too, and maybe I just need to reframe how I think about them, because if it's just a legal procedural, then there don't need to be any...
Right.
Law and Order style twists, you know? Like, we're so conditioned to expect that from sort of a courtroom drama.
Sure.
That when a movie doesn't have that, I'm like, well, that's a cheat. But no, this is very much just a procedural. And when you watch it in the context of the time period, some of the things that they talk about, I mean, it kind of addresses rape in certain ways. It references, like, men, you know, fucking to completion. Like, and you're like, oh my god, this is made in the 50s. Like, this is wild. And it's all in a very
Jimmy Stewart,
clinical, legal. Oh, there's a hardcore porn scene.
What? Which is
like, oh gosh. So, okay, then to punish myself for watching,
ring a bell or
for like basically eating vegetables, yeah. I watched The Internship, the Ooh. Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson Google commercial.
Oh man.
There's nothing to say about it. When the credit came up at the end, like screenplay by Vince Vaughn, story by Vince Vaughn, I was really trying to wrap my head around. He was just sitting around like,
what's the story?
How can I get Google to pay me a bunch of money to make a movie? Wedding Crashers has a huge fan base. I think it's okay. So for these two guys to reteam on a movie that is this amazingly uninspired and is a comedy with so few jokes, not even like jokes that aren't funny.
Sure.
Like, jokes that literally, there aren't jokes. It's just telling this story about these two guys who work at Google. Tested my patience, clocks in at just over 2 hours, which is nice. At the end, like, the Google CEO walks by in a cameo, and they're like, oh, hey, thanks, boss. And it ends on just this reverential shot of the Google building. I mean, the whole thing is just this advertisement for Google, which, by the way, like, we're all sold on Google.
Yeah, right. Don't
the internship is not going to convince us. Like, oh, what's this thing called Google? This
right, sure.
Search engine like that runs the world. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, we're with you on Google. We don't need Vince Vaughn to sell us. Last movie I'll talk about very quickly is called Dead Hooker in a Trunk, which is of course the sequel to
Anatomy of a Murder.
It's about this American ninja. That,
oh, are they from Chicago?
It's the first film by Jen and Sylvia Soska, which if you're a horror fan, that might mean something. They made a movie, I think, last year, 2 years ago, called American Mary, which was on Netflix. Very much worth checking out.
Oh, I remember that.
They are directing See No Evil 2 with Kane, the wrestler.
What?
Which is coming out next month. They were at Flashback Weekend, which I was at last weekend, and they're crazy and entertaining to listen to speak, and so I found their first movie at a dealer table for fairly cheap and picked it up, and it's very much a first movie. Like, it's super rough, it's clearly shot very, very cheap, but it has some energy and some inventive stuff, and you can see it, and you can tell, like, oh, with more resources, they're going to be better.
Yeah.
And that's what American Mary is. You know, there are some filmmakers who have that. You go back and watch their first movie, and you're like, oh, I can definitely see who they're going to be with just with more behind them. So, you know, and they act in it too, which is kind of interesting because they're mostly behind the camera. So to see them in front of the camera was fun. I'm not suggesting anybody run out and see it, but I saw it, and there you have it.
Dead Hooker in a Trunk.
Dead Hooker in a Trunk.
See, that's a title I can remember.
Exactly. Well, it really seems like they started with the title and kind of worked.
That's okay.
Backwards.
It's like The Internship.
I think the story they told was that they saw Grindhouse in 2007, and they were very inspired by it, and they kind of wanted to make a movie that fit into that mold.
Sure.
And contacted, I think, Eli Roth, and he kind of got behind them and helped them get distribution for that movie. So, good for him. All good right. for them. We all come out winners. Let's talk about Expendables 3, boys, because we have to. We literally just saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have not spoken to one another really about it, although I have a vague sense of how we all felt. So I'll start with you, Mark. How did you feel about it? Remember, we're spoiler-free right now, so how did you feel about Expendables 3?
I will be totally honest.
Please be totally honest. Okay. I tolerate no liars.
By the way, all the other previous podcasts,
lies?
I've been nothing a liar.
That kidnapping story was bullshit.
I wasn't.
You never even saw Tron.
Right. All those movies I said I liked, I lied. I hated them.
This changes the Taken podcast.
I know it did. It did. I just looked it up on Wikipedia right before, and I just make stuff up for 2 hours. I'm so talented. In all honesty, I expected that this wouldn't be good.
Okay.
Was my expectation.
Yes.
And it was better than that.
Interesting.
I actually thought I was like, oh, it's all right.
Okay.
It's all right. So I came away from it. You know what? because I remember I don't remember if this was my reaction to this to the second one or the first one. It probably doesn't matter.
They all run together.
They really do, just like Chuck Norris movies. but just walking out, just kind of you know, yeah. deflated. Right. And this one, I didn't feel deflated really. So
do you feel like any of that was because, like, going into the first one, it's like, this is gonna be great, and then it's not.
Yes.
And then the second one, you're like, this time they're gonna get it, and then they didn't. And you're like, sure. So now you walk into this, like, well, they're definitely gonna fuck this up, and it's like, they didn't.
No, I think it's really close to that, and I think part of that is there were some things, as usual for pleasant surprises, there were things that I did not expect. That happened. That I was like, oh, I had no idea that was what was going on.
So okay,
I would be very careful in recommending this to like certain. Like, I wouldn't recommend this to like everyone, but certain people, I'd be like, well, yeah, maybe this would.
So if you have been a fan of these movies, you would say this one is definitely
yes. I'd say like maybe you'd want to try this.
All right,
even there, cautious
Adam.
I think that I'm a little bit in Mark's camp here in the sense that...
Let's go camping.
Yes. that the movie is better than the other two, in my opinion.
Okay.
I hated two. I hated the second one.
Okay.
One is not good. And right. This one at least had... When you see in your head... All these action stars are going to be in a movie together. This at least had some of what... I expected that to look like, in the sense that there's a lot more action in this one. Okay. I think, especially compared to, I would say the first one.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of action in this one. So, I'm kind of agreeing a lot with Mark on this one. That is it's not a good movie, but it's it's right. better than the previous ones, at least in my opinion.
Okay. I feel like I totally disagree with both of you guys.
That's fine.
No, that's great. Upon first viewing, I think I liked this one the least of all three of them.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. For a number of reasons, and one being that I actually didn't think there was enough action, because really when you think about, there's an opening sequence with the jailbreak. There's a very short thing in the middle. Which I won't get into because that would involve spoilers. And then there's the climax. And the climax is cool, and there's a lot of stuff that happens.
That's a huge set piece.
Yeah, it definitely is. Other than that, it's like a lot of stretches of like dialogue and characters explaining things to each other.
Especially in that first.
Sharing their histories and a long sequence where Stallone has to go around and round up the new Expendables.
Every part of the world.
This movie has, I will say this for Expendables 3, the most costume changes of any Expendables movie. It's like Stallone wanted... It's like he wanted $5 million just for a wardrobe budget, and so wrote a bunch of scenes to justify all his costume changes. It's just a bunch of scenes where he gets to wear different stuff, including the ugliest jacket in the world.
I've ever seen in my life.
Adam, like, audibly, to the entire theater, just blurted out, just, what are you wearing? It was fantastic.
I hate the beret. Like, I hate that beret that he wears. But I found myself longing for the beret during those scenes.
Should I take off the beret that I'm wearing right now?
No, your beret's cool.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, you're working it.
Right, I don't like Statham's beret. I don't like any berets in my action movies, ever. No berets.
Not even in Rambo?
No, fuck Rambo.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, there were a lot of cigars also.
Yeah.
A lot of cigars smoking as well. Oh, geez. Now where do we go?
Well, no, listen. Here's my issue with the movie, and it's something that has happened in the previous two, but I feel like this one succumbs to it more than any other. It's incredibly overstuffed, and not in a good way. Not in like, hey, guys, here's too much of a good thing.
Sure.
As in, like, we put too much in here, and now there's no time to service any of it. So you have my man Dolph Lundgren, who's just cool. Like, he's on screen, and he creates a character with just a facial expression, which is more than 95% of the cast is able to do.
Right.
And then he gets, I don't know, four lines of dialogue and no character beat. Even in Expendables 2, I remember complaining about the fact that they ended up shitting on the joke. I don't remember how, but he was in a cave, and he was doing, like, crazy math problems, and we're like, no, that's a fun shout out because he's a fucking Mensa scholar.
It doesn't work. That's the thing that killed me about it.
Yeah. So that's dumb that they killed the joke. But at least there was that little character beat that I felt like people got those beats, and in this movie, almost no one does. And my frustration is, and it's my frustration with all these movies, I want to like them so much, I'm the exact audience, and I just feel like they don't know how to make this movie work. And part of the problem is that no matter what, it always turns into the Sylvester Stallone show. Yes. And it shouldn't be. I understand he directed the first one, he's written all three of them, but it's an ensemble movie, and he needs to let the ensemble do some work. There's other things I want to say that get into spoilers in terms of, like, who gets what amount of screen time. But you have an actor who has done some of the most kick-ass martial arts movies in the history of the world.
Yeah.
And he's on screen for 7 minutes and shoots a gun. What is he doing in this movie? I
cannot agree with you more on that one.
So no one is really put to good use. Antonio Banderas comes off great.
He
steals the movie.
Yeah, he's the best part of it.
Creates a character, very funny, we like him, is not in it enough. You know, again, it's kind of tacked on to the end. That might be a spoiler, so I apologize. Wesley Snipes starts off, and you're like, is he doing the best performance I've ever seen, or the worst? Is he on another planet, or is he just making weird, interesting choices?
I was like, yes.
Because at least it's something new and different, you know, and then he's sidelined for the rest of the movie and is given nothing to do.
I've grown to really like Jason Statham in movies.
Oh,
like
he's me too, but not in these movies.
No, he's not in it at all.
No.
Like, come on.
No one is put to good use. And, you know, my problem with Statham in these movies is, he doesn't get really a chance to shine. He has to wear the stupid beret. And all of these scenes are him and Sylvester Stallone sitting in the cockpit of their plane, like, bickering and supposedly cracking each other up, even though nothing they say is ever funny, ever.
That is probably the thing that annoys me about these three movies the most, is
all the
nothing is padding
that they do.
Yes,
right.
Nothing is funny, and it's all stupid jokes, like oh my god. But they got on the little boat, the little raft they have, and he's like, "Hey, ladies." I'm like, "Come on, really?"
No, that's
like,
funny. No. He calls them ladies, but they're boys.
Yeah,
so that's why it's funny. That's why it's funny. And then he makes a joke about, like, Terry Crews, like, "Oh, you blow your wad in 10 seconds." Cut to shots of everyone laughing. Cut to another guy saying, "Ah, you set yourself up for that one." Cut to more shots of people laughing. The pacing of this movie was killing me for the first hour because there was all this unnecessary shit.
I think another two things I want to bring up. And since we're talking about things that are irritating us, but I don't want to spoil the movie. These are not spoilers.
Okay.
There were so many musical cues.
Yeah.
Just like I felt like there was maybe one stretch where there was no score. And that was great because it was two people talking and I could hear them. Right. But
this movie needed subtitles. And all of the characters are speaking English. Yes. Like, and I'm not one to complain about, like, "Oh, Stallone grunts and blah, blah, blah." I've never made that complaint.
He was one I could understand a lot of the time.
I had a hard time with Stallone speaking this one. It was really rough.
There were a number of lines that I genuinely could not
comprehend. I just missed it. I couldn't do it. Yeah. But a ton of musical cues. Like, just turn it down. Turn it down. I think as a cranky old man, let me fix my beret, that I've gotten older and I just hate it when music is piped in unnecessarily, like anywhere, just places. But especially in movies, like, just let the thing breathe a little bit. So that's one thing that I kept on noticing. Second thing was that I felt like everything, just the way that things were shot, were like so everything. And this is my complaint for the first two movies too, is that everything was shot so tight.
Yeah.
Like everything's like,
yeah,
I get, fine, you want a close up, that's all right. Why are you cutting off the top of the forehead and the bottom of the chin? Like, that is way too tight.
And this is one of my problems. And this Patrick Hughes, I'm not familiar with his work. I know he made a movie called Red Hill that I never saw. New, and a lot of people have said that he does the best job directing, you know, one of the Expendables movies. But I had the same problem that I didn't think any of the action was particularly well shot.
No, not at all.
There was some stuff that happens in the climax where I'm like, oh, I'll bet that was really cool. I couldn't see it because you didn't know how to shoot it. And some of it is them cutting around the violence to get the PG-13, which, by the way, let's remember, folks, this was a PG-13 movie. Hundreds, if not 1,000 people are gunned down in this movie. Like, mass death.
Right.
PG-13, because you don't see any blood. It is ridiculous.
You know, like, I okay, when you see, like, The Raid, okay?
Yeah.
The Raid, like, The Raid, you can tell, like, wow, those are some great action sequences. And part of my mind starts to go to, well, they probably got these guys because they can all fight. You know, when you got guys who can actually fight,
right,
it makes it easier to do this, you know? So then I got excited because, well, I shouldn't say excited. Okay, there's a girl in this movie. I don't think I'm really, like, she...
Ronda Rousey?
Is that her?
Yeah, that's her name.
She's the worst actress.
She's not great. Yeah. She's not great. I felt good about it when it ended because I thought, well, now no one can talk shit about Gina Carano, which is great. Yes. Right. Gina Carano is fucking Laurence Olivier compared to Ronda Rousey.
Sir Laurence Olivier. Sorry.
But so I was like, okay, so she's clearly in this movie
because
she can do action sequences.
Right.
Maybe we'll at least see some cool action sequences.
I was waiting for her to just maul someone.
Yeah, no. The action was terrible with her.
It wasn't great.
She has her introduction is a scene in a club where she beats two people up, and apparently it impresses Sylvester Stallone so much that he welcomes her onto his team, even though he was watching two dudes like fight in a garage, beating the shit out of each other, and he was like, no, not them. This girl who beat up two boys. There's a Gina Carano movie that came out earlier this year called In the Blood. Not very good. She beats up a couple people in a club, 10 times better. Like, that scene is so awesome. The Ronda Rousey scene, not so much.
Oh, that makes me sad.
Expendables 2, like, the thing is with action movies, I generally like to come away from them. Like, the ones that you remember, the ones that really work, are the ones where you're like, there was a lot of cool shit. Like, I saw cool stuff. Cool things happened, you know? Expendables 2 had some of that, I would argue. Again, it stepped on by Rest in Pieces, but the moment that precedes Rest in Pieces...
is great.
...is a cool scene.
Yeah.
It had Jean-Claude Van Damme being awesome as the villain, and we could talk about Mel Gibson in just a second. I would argue even the Liam Hemsworth stuff, while kind of ridiculous... gave the movie a little bit, not of an emotional weight, but at least it sort of made sense where it went. And in this movie, I don't want to get into specifics about the plot. All right, we're going to move into spoilers, everyone. So if you have not yet seen Expendables 3,
oh, we're doing this quick.
Go see it. Well, listen, they have a general sense of... Yeah. You know if you're going to go see this or not. It's not like on someone's recommendation. I should check out this Expendables 3.
Hey, did you hear?
Let's see what that Randy Couture is up to. So, spoilers for Expendables 3 starting now. Okay. In this movie, Terry Crews gets shot, which is a problem, because Terry Crews is one of the best members of the team.
He has a pulse.
So they sideline him for the whole movie, because of course, let's take something that works and get rid of it. And there was some reason, like, he couldn't be in the movie, basically, so he's in a coma for the whole movie. So he gets shot, Stallone fires the whole team.
Yeah.
Hires next generation. In the last movie, like, Liam Hemsworth gets murdered in front of him. Nobody fucking gets fired. No one gets fired. They go into another war-torn Eastern European country.
Look, he'd seen too much of it.
I guess.
Too many deaths.
I mean, and that's the problem, is that none of the plot stuff, if you can call it that, worked for me. And this movie is a lot of plot. Like,
yeah.
I understand that we don't go to these movies for plot, and as soon as you say that, someone's like, no, we're there to see people fuck shit up. Like, yeah, I understand that. I don't think this movie did a great job of showing people fuck shit up, but I also think it relied very heavily on scenes of characters talking to one another, and Stallone firing his whole team and going to get out the next generation, who are all lame and uninteresting.
Yes. Yeah.
And then they get kidnapped, and then his whole team has to come back. It's a bunch of these major story beats that don't work.
Agree. I liked Harrison Ford.
Okay.
Here's why. He wasn't great.
No.
But he had a pulse.
Okay.
He had a pulse. He was... like, when he... We're in spoilers, nice.
Yeah.
So when he's flying he's flying the helicopter.
Yeah.
And he's cracking horrible jokes.
Yes.
He has a pulse, kind of. He's not just sitting there, just doing nothing. The first, when he's introduced into the movie...
Yeah.
Like, and he's talking to Stallone's character outside of the hospital or where Terry.
Yeah, I actually did kind of like that. Yeah,
it was nice because he had a pulse. He was playing it really serious. But I think it felt like Harrison Ford knew what movie he was in. Like, this is sort of a like campy? Is that the word I want? I don't know. But that sort of action kind of movie. And it felt like Harrison... I got a sense that Harrison Ford sort of knew that that's what he was in. Whereas... And that, and what's frustrating was that that scene with Stallone, and like this is any of Stallone's scenes, is that Stallone doesn't know what movie he's in. Whereas everybody else, maybe, I don't know. But Harrison Ford knew, but then Stallone doesn't. And so he's like this ultra serious dude or whatever.
They're in 10 different movies, and that's part of the problem too, because Antonio Banderas is in something very light and funny.
Yeah.
And Stallone is in this fucking heavy.
Right. Like Punisher Warzone.
I'm glad you bring up, though, that scene outside the hospital, because I had that same reaction. I was dreading Harrison Ford's arrival a little bit. And I liked that scene. Like you said, he played it kind of serious. And I didn't really feel this way about the rest of his scenes.
Sure.
But I like that he played it serious, because he's obviously filling in for Bruce Willis, and we get the dumb little, like, oh, he's out of the picture, because, haha, he wanted too much money.
Right.
But Bruce Willis always just kind of smirked his way through the scenes, like, haha, I'm here because I'm Bruce Willis, and that has some cachet. And Harrison Ford wasn't just showing up to be Harrison Ford.
Right.
He did play that scene like the way it should have been played, and like that was good. Yeah, there were... Right. A handful of those moments in the movie that I liked.
Can we talk about Antonio Banderas?
Yeah.
I think that was an inspired... I had forgotten that he was in this.
Yeah, so did I when he showed up.
More than once I had that, where it was like... At one point I was like, oh yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to show up at some point. He's going to limp into frame randomly and not be put to any use. But yeah, when Antonio Banderas first showed up, I was like, oh right, he's in this.
And what an entrance.
Yeah.
Full of energy, totally like manic.
Yeah,
he's created this like OCD, but traumatized. Like
crazy he's like an Expendables groupie.
Yeah, yeah, well, like what I liked about the way they introduced him was, had they introduced him first, I think it would have. But you saw these young guys first, and then you see this other guy like leaping down,
which I was irritated with until the reveal, because I'm like, why am I watching 30 seconds of this dumb parkour shit? I've seen this before.
Yeah, but then then you see it's Antonio Banderas, so you're like, oh, that's fucking awesome, you know? And then he is the best character in all of the movies.
Maybe. I mean, he might tie with Van Damme in part two, but he's a lot of fun, and that's one of the things that these movies kind of seem to be missing, is a sense of joy. Like, there's joy in his performance, and there's very little joy from anyone else. And Van Damme had it in part two.
Yeah.
There's very little joy from anyone in these movies.
What I was going to say also, what I liked about them, it was another moment that I enjoyed with Banderas, is he plays this manic character the entire time. And then there's one serious moment with him, which I think was my favorite part of the movie, was when he's talking about it, and Stallone kind of says, oh yeah, they were Torres and whoever was like, and he turns to him, and he's like, oh, you were listening, you know, like that was a great moment.
That was good. I agree with that.
And there was no score at that part, but I just want to point that out.
There should have been.
It would have run.
So let's talk about Mel Gibson.
Let's talk about him.
Oh,
who, again, I feel like got one good scene. Yes. I think it was...
The one in the van.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was a little over the top, you know, but I guess that's what you hire Mel Gibson for now. You know, the whole thing frustrates me, because I was watching it just thinking about, like, Lethal Weapon and how awesome that movie is and how awesome he was. And he's become this other thing in our eyes, and now his casting is always sort of ironic, and, he's playing the villain. And then thank God they didn't make any, like, jokes at his expense or, like, kind of winky shit.
But I think they did.
When
in this, if you, I'm just saying this, I was watching it. If you notice, the girl he was with seemed to be Russian or a foreign, and she was a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And I kind of saw that as a wink, wink.
Eesh, like, God, I hope not.
That was just me. I saw it that way when I was watching.
There was less of that bullshit in this movie, except for Schwarzenegger going, do the job. There was less. Expendables 2 was lousy with that shit, just callbacks and dumb references, and this movie really only had the one that I could pick out. And Wesley Snipes saying tax evasion. Sorry, there were two.
Arnold did say Chapa twice.
Yeah, and the first one I gave it a pass, because it was like, oh, that's just sort of a reference.
I was like, maybe that'll be, flat that's out, fine, exactly. But then he just came out and said
he says it badly. And again, I'm such a mark for this kind of shit that, like, just one shot of him walking, firing a machine gun, and, like, laughing. I'm like, that's what I came to see. Mm-hmm. That is money. That's Thank money you. In the bank.
Right.
And there's just not enough of that kind of stuff. It's like they haven't figured out, here are the things that people came to see, and let's give that to them. So Mel Gibson, I thought the scene in the van was good. I thought he did a good job of creating a villain that was hateful, and yet at the same time, like, not sympathetic, but...
had a story.
Yeah.
Had a reason.
Yeah.
Sure.
And seemed genuinely, again, angry.
Yeah.
And was threatening because of that. But again, he's in four scenes.
That's it.
And the first two, he's looking at art.
Yeah.
But then the problem that I had was you got his character in the van scene. And the van scene was done. I was like, oh, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
And then when he captures the four new ones, and he gives that entire new, that other speech, and I was like, ugh.
Yeah,
like that, I don't want to hear this.
So much of the movie, though, it's like characters explaining backstory to one another.
Okay, here's Listen. Okay, what I find, I think the most is this, I think to me this is the most frustrating thing is that you have. Okay, I read some. Oh gosh, I think it was either a YouTube video or just some article that I read about Sylvester Stallone. Like, was giving like a talk at a some sort of seminar.
It might have been a TED Talk.
It might have been, yeah.
Pretty sure he was giving a TED Talk.
This is what I think about poverty.
Lucky ring.
But. That'd be great. The good thing about
it, make more lucky rings for the people in poverty.
Check out my jacket, my new ring. Oh,
do you like my American, Native American Navajo jacket?
God, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Can we just talk about that jacket?
Yeah, we can. You're not interrupting. This is
He clearly important. Thought it was cool. Like, he's wearing the wardrobe of a 30-year-old. Not that a 30-year-old would wear that jacket, but, like, his jeans that are rolled up and, like, his boots. I mean, he really... Apparently, Barney Ross, or whatever this guy is a very stylish motherfucker, even though he's just a mercenary who doesn't care about any clothes, I thought.
Right.
But again, we don't know anything about him as a human being.
No, it looks
all
like...
All we know is that, like, oh, he's my brother, my family. You fired them? What the fuck?
Right. I was on United Airlines, and I was looking through the shopping magazine, and I bought this jacket.
That's what that jacket looks like.
It looks like a blanket. It looks like he cut up his, like, grandmother's blanket.
Can you just explain? I know we're in spoilers, and it doesn't matter. Could you just explain what the jacket looks like?
It's like a snake skin or something. It's like awful.
Like Aztec design type.
Yeah, it was really bad.
Yeah, it's like a Navajo.
But that whole sequence
blanket.
Was really bad. You could have taken that sequence basically out of the movie.
Yes.
And not. I mean, Kelsey Grammer was like, okay.
Sure.
He was giving a performance, you know.
Yeah.
Didn't really belong in the movie. Didn't need a character to drive Stallone around and introduce him to the next generation.
I love how many places they went. Right? It's like, by the way...
And that had to take 4 weeks.
Right. By the way, if you're unfamiliar with world geography, this movie wants to teach you what it is. This is Mogadishu, Somalia, everyone. That's in Somalia.
And by the way, they keep talking about Kellan Lutz as having a problem with authority. Never once is that actually shown on screen.
Right.
That's his one character trait. Like, this guy does tech. This one has a vagina. Right. This one...
Rides
has
a motorcycle.
A problem with authority and rides a motorcycle because, like, his look when he's like, "Ooh, they have motorcycles! I'm gonna get me one." They just keep saying, "I know you got a problem with authority," but, like, never is that demonstrated on screen ever.
Quite complicit with everything.
Anyway,
so he just rides motorcycles. Also, I'm just remembering there was another shirt that he wore that had the same Navajo. I'm calling it Navajo.
There are bad clothes
sorry.
All over this movie. Everyone, every time they're in street clothes, right. It's bad news.
All of our Navajo listeners, I'm so sorry. I'm probably totally misidentifying. But then he had a shirt
Aztec.
That just had the
Say
collars.
Aztec, you'll offend your people.
Aztec, sure. No, this was just ridiculous. What was the thing I was talking about? Oh, yeah. I
don't care. Removed.
It's fine. We have a lot of windows open. Let me fix my beret. The most frustrating thing about this movie, I think, is that there's so Stallone, he gives all these talks, and there's some interview where he's, like, talking about film and whatever, and actually the write-up of the thing, the writer was saying, like, you know what, Stallone is actually quite knowledgeable about how movies are made and how to put things together and all this other stuff. And I was also surprised as well because I sort of think of him as his meathead, but at the same time, he's worked in movies for such a long time. He does. And that makes it even more frustrating when he just can't put a movie together.
Right.
Like, I just see this third movie making the same mistakes. And we were talking about, I mean, earlier when Adam was talking about it, like the same shitty movies that those are why they're shitty. It's the same mistakes he makes in the first and the second movie. It's like, why can't you just back, for instance, just back the camera up a little bit, please. Like, and so that's what's just super frustrating about it. That it's still the same problems after making three of these. Like, what? I don't know.
Again, it seems to be that the work is done once the cast is assembled, because we can pat ourselves on the back for putting Wesley Snipes in a movie and put him on the poster, and that will appeal to people like us who like action movies and are like, I haven't seen Wesley Snipes in an action movie since, like, Blade in 1998, so I'm going to go,
period.
So then they give him, you know, 5 minutes and then sideline him for the rest of the movie. Right. And it just sucks. And I know, you know, in this case, I mean, he's working with, like, all these different foreign financiers, and this is has much more focus on, like, sort of a global marketplace than it does on a domestic one. And I guess these Expendables movies make just enough money to warrant a sequel. But I hope they stop, because they have. He's done it three times now, and he hasn't gotten it right.
No.
So how many chances do you get?
This, I feel like this movie, with the exception of the end kind of set piece, I feel like this movie felt a lot cheaper than the other ones. Because can we just talk about the CGI real quick?
No, what are you talking about? Terrible. The CGI was. What are you?
It was fantastic.
Oh my god!
What, the green screen shot where him and Kelsey Grammer are driving in front of. You couldn't just film them driving?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Why are we fucking green screening a driving
sequence?
Kelsey
Grammer's got no time to go to Juarez, Mexico.
Right. Like when
Mexico.
When he blows up the helicopter at the beginning, I was like,
so many CGI explosions.
Straight out of Sci-Fi
Channel.
So many
CGI helicopters. Like, again, we go to movies like this to see practical shit, right? Real people doing real stunts and, like... That kind of, absolutely. It's inexcusable.
There's moments where you can say, okay, you know, the scene I was thinking about was when the two helicopters are going in between the smokestacks.
Okay.
I was like, you know what? Maybe it's okay for people's safety sakes. If you're going to film that, do it CGI. Okay, we'll forget. But yeah, there was unnecessary CGI.
Right. Like, instead of blowing up the helicopter, which does nothing except give you a shot for the trailer, I assume.
Right.
Just don't blow it up. Leave out the CGI explosion and don't have that beat. I would rather shit not blow up than blow up on a computer.
Yes.
Because explosions are never interesting to me. You know what I mean? Like, also, I don't understand these countries where they are constantly finding themselves, these war-torn decimates.
No, they made buildings. They made up one. What's the...
Buildings are leveled.
Amanistan?
Amanistan or something.
Amanistan? They made up the country.
Buildings are completely leveled, just everything's rubble, and yet there are still, like, fires burning.
Right.
Like, did this just happen? Was the city just leveled before they got here?
It's a tire fire.
This car's been burning for 25 years.
It's not very biodegradable.
Here's a question. Why does the warden of the prison from which Wesley Snipes is broken out of...
Oh.
Why is his picture...
No, and then why does he stand next to the painting of himself?
Except to, I guess, tell us, without using dialogue, that he's the one in charge.
I'm that guy.
He's the one Wesley Snipes really wants to kill.
I don't get it.
It's shitty. That's what it is.
But you know what? It wasn't green screened. I think someone actually painted it.
That is true, maybe?
And even if it was green screened, somebody would have had to digitally paint that painting.
That's true.
So we get all these scenes of Mel Gibson, like, looking at art, buying art, and then it's sort of halfway explained when he says, oh, they don't x-ray the paintings.
And that's it.
And that's how I'm transporting weapons inside paintings?
Why'd you have to spend $3 million on the painting?
Probably buy a shitty painting.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't even understand what he's trying to do, but it does bring us to the Robert Davi cameo, which, again, like, he showed up on screen, and that was a genuine surprise.
Right.
And I kind of laughed, because it was a little bit of reveal. Like, I'm meeting the buyer, and it shows up, and it's Robert Davi. And if you're a fan of these kinds of movies, you're like, holy shit, Robert Davi, that's funny.
Playing the bad guy.
Right. And you're like, oh, they do kind of know the movie that they're making. And then, of course, he's killed within seconds. And that's fine, because I didn't need more Robert Davi, but, like... It's just so frustrating to me because I feel, and it's very easy for me to backseat driver, you know, the screenplay and say, gosh, if they would just let me do it.
I'd let you do it.
I feel like I could write a pretty good Expendables movie. And one of the things I would do is get rid of some of the fucking cast because there are way too many people in this movie. Why do we need Next Generation? Why?
No,
why?
We didn't.
We didn't. They have to put Ronda Rousey in a movie, which I know will sell some tickets, but...
At least that's like a sort of a defensible choice. Okay. Sort of. Because that's like a thing now. Right. Gina Carano's out there. That's a thing.
Right.
She's an MMA, UFC fighter. Like,
right.
That's Randy Couture is as well, right?
He's a terrific actor.
Yeah, he's a block of granite.
We still have never seen him, like, do his thing.
He hasn't done... And yeah, at least with one of the other Expendables, with the exception of Wesley Snipes, who's just introduced,
right.
We at least have gotten 3 to 4 minutes of each one of them in each movie.
Right. And Randy Couture is like a fighter. Like, he really could beat the shit out of some people. We still have never really gotten to see...
He must be nursing. He must be nursing an injury or
whatever. It's his cauliflower ear. We've still never really gotten... And there were little character touches in past movies, like, where he's always reading or, like, eating cereal, and they make fun of him. He's like, what's wrong with cereal? That's funny. Like, right. I like that beat. In this movie, of course, there's none of it. Dolph Lundgren gets nothing. Dolph Lundgren is the coolest.
No, he gets to sharpen his knife.
Oh, that's right.
Right, and he made a short joke about Jet Li at the end.
But should we talk about Jet Li?
You know why? Because Jet Li's short.
That was... I was waiting. When they drop him off on the roof, I was like, here we go. We're going to get the scene, like, in number two, right before he falls out of the plane and is out of the movie, okay?
Right.
But, like...
Gotta go, guys.
Yeah, we get that scene where he does... It's like a full shot.
Right.
It's a good 30 seconds of him beating the shit out of some guys with some pots and pans. And I was like, here we go. We're going to get Jet Li to do some nothing.
No.
Just shoots a gun on the roof.
Once again, I would like to point out, advantage, Expendables 2. He shoots a gun, and then he has a scene with Schwarzenegger, who seems odd and uncomfortable, and just kind of... People just drift in and out of these movies. I mean, that was always a problem with the second one, too, but, like, Harrison Ford shows up randomly. Schwarzenegger just shows up at the hospital and then walks away. Shows up to fly a plane at one point for no reason. Where Schwarzenegger and Jet Li are standing next to one another. Were you watching Jet Li? He was making crazy eyes. Like, he was doing this weird, wide-eyed thing. Like, what is he doing? Is he on crank?
I tried to not watch him because it made me so sad.
But I kind of liked the little thing of him and Schwarzenegger whispering to each other.
Yeah, like, that was great.
It became unintelligible and ridiculous. We were like, oh, he's jealous. Like, okay, I don't know where this
That's
is going.
Funny, though.
But the whispering I thought was funny. Like,
sure.
But again, it came down to a joke. It was like, oh, you're working for Drench now? And I think he says, like, he pays me more, but could not understand a lot of what was said in this movie.
Again, and then Stallone makes a joke, and that was the second time I blurted out in the middle of the movie theater. What did he say?
And again, just even in that moment, Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Jet Li, decades of action movie experience, right? Acting experience. This is what we get. It's a turd sandwich.
There were 2 seconds where Harrison Ford, you know, shows up in his pilot's uniform to fly the CGI helicopter, and he approaches Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I got a little bit excited because I'm like, Harrison Ford and Arnold Schwarzenegger are in a scene together.
Indiana Jones and the Terminator.
Right. Thank you, Expendables. And then, of course, there's just... Again, the movies don't know how to create character, and not that, you know... I know this is making people's heads explode because, hey, no, we go to these movies for action. I would still contend that they have bad action. So
yes, I would as well.
So failing that, like, they should have some characters. Don't just rest on the fact that you have this cast.
Sure.
People keep talking to Stallone, especially Statham, and talking about, like, how crazy he is. Stallone, you're crazy. Barney, you're crazy. You're demented. You're a madman. Like, okay. In the context of the movie, when has he ever been crazy? I understand that he keeps going on these suicide missions, and to you or me, like, that's crazy. I would never do that. But all of them do.
Right.
So why is he any crazier than the rest of them?
It's their job. They're called the Expendables.
I didn't realize also that they called each other Expendables. Like, oh, he's an Expendable. Like, I didn't know.
Like, this is the first time they started calling themselves that.
Well, they
I don't remember them bringing that up.
Wait, was the tattoo from the first one? Because Mickey Rourke's in the first one, right?
Right.
And then he's the tattoo guy.
Right.
And he puts tattoos on everyone.
Okay.
I don't remember.
I don't either. Also, remember when Dolph Lundgren tried to murder everyone in the first
movie?
And now he's on their team. So how come when Mel Gibson turns bad, they can't be like, hey, you could be on the team in Expendables 4.
That's okay.
We're a very forgiving bunch.
Keep sharpening your knife.
Right.
It's totally okay. Don't worry about it.
All right. Oh, go ahead.
No, you go.
No, because I was just going to... No, say what you're going to say, because I need to defend the movie a little bit.
No, defend it.
But I
want to
talk about some, like... Let's get all the shit out of the system before we defend it.
No, I mean, defend it all you want.
I thought at least one of the reasons I like this one, and I think it's a little bit better than the other ones, because when we keep saying you know, they don't get it right, they don't get it right, they don't get it right. At least with this one, I felt that they understood the set piece at the end, where it's like,
sure,
we've got all these action stars,
right,
and we're going to put them in a war zone and just have this happen, which I thought they kind of started getting things a little bit right in that sense, meaning, okay, they get why action movies work. And
right.
This huge action set piece, at least for me, was working. And the second thing, and I know I've said it before, this one didn't have Chuck Norris. And I hated Chuck Norris in the last one.
You know, he was terrible.
Yeah.
And he showed up for just dumb jokes, and then he walked away. I agree that the set piece at the end is the best thing in the movie. My issues with it are, A, that it's not particularly well shot, so you can't really tell what's going on all the time. Yeah. You know, and again, I think some of that is to cut around the R rating, because there were like two things right in a row that I could tell were supposed to be awesome, but they had to cut away so much that they ended up just being nothing. It moves too quickly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because
yes.
They're trying to juggle so many people. It's like, we have to cut to this guy and then cut to this guy. And then what's this guy doing? And let's go back to this guy. It's there's too many people to keep track of.
And there's no sense of geography. Like, you don't know, like, so they're in the building. I have no idea where they are in the building. Yeah, right. Like,
I knew Kellan Lutz was on the ground on a motorcycle. Yeah. That I knew.
I knew Ronda Rousey was in the bottom lobby. Floor yeah, with right. the poker tables.
Right. Yeah. That's on the she was on the poker floor.
Poker floor. And then everybody else was on, I don't know where. So.
But also that I just wish that it had been able to breathe a little bit more to give each person like a beat, you know, like a moment, something cool that they did or whatever in that sequence. It got about halfway there, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But certainly it was the biggest sequence I think in any of the movies. Again, yes. I still might have liked the sequence in 2 better, only because it did have that moment where they all opened fire on the dude.
Right.
And it's so great. And you have the Statham and Scott Adkins fight, and you have the Stallone-Van Damme fight. Like, Stallone versus Mel Gibson was almost an afterthought in this movie. Right. It was about 10 seconds long. And
But then I'm just going to say this about
there's a ton of bad shit in 2. I'm not defending 2.
Okay, all right. Well,
there's a ton of bad shit in it. I just think I liked it more than this one.
Okay. But I also thought when they break into when they're going to go after Mel Gibson for the first time, I thought that, you know, them like the breaking in thing kind of had a spy feel to it. I liked that, and I liked Mel Gibson's escape. I thought that was pretty cool.
So. Yeah. Okay. Again, that was sort of the very short middle action sequence, because again, there's the prison break at the beginning, the big climax at the end, except for that little escape scene that you're talking about in the middle.
There's also the Somalia stuff.
What's the Somalia stuff?
Where they get their asses kicked.
That's still basically all part of the same opening sequence, right? Because it goes right from prison break to that.
There's a little bit of a lull when they're kind of like on the
Because they even tell Wesley Snipes, like, you're not going home. We're dragging you onto a mission. But yeah.
That's true.
Except for the Mel Gibson escape. I mean, there's no action. Okay. It's like a bunch at the beginning, a bunch at the end, nothing in that whole middle section.
Do you guys remember the guy that's supposed to be the computer tech guy?
Yeah, no, he was awesome.
No, and he totally got lost at this. I just was reminded because we're talking about this final set piece, which was at least like, you know, there's things happening. That guy's part in the final set piece is he just to climb up an elevator.
Climb up an elevator shaft, yeah.
That's all he's doing.
Yeah.
It's just the difficulty of climbing up an elevator shaft. There's no like, oh, I dropped my thing that I'm carrying to prevent the bomb from exploding. Nothing. Right. That's all that
I liked
guy
the
does.
Idea of like having to keep him alive, which was sort of thrown away in one line of dialogue
because
he's the one jamming the signal. I liked the idea of the battery running out, stupid as it was, that like Dolph Lundgren has one of these now and that's the thing that's saving them. But this idea that when the battery runs out, the building explodes. Sure. Like all that stuff I thought was okay.
I thought that they missed a moment there for
something
funny.
That's all they do in these movies.
they just miss moments. Yeah, I thought they missed a moment for something that would have been, at least in my mind, a little bit amusing, is they every time they cut to him, he's climbing up an elevator shaft.
Yeah.
Difficult, right. Like not on a ladder,
right.
Very difficult way. And then at the very end, the helicopter lands and everybody else just goes up the stairs.
Right.
Yeah.
And I thought they missed a moment for him to like, pop his head out and be like, what the fuck?
That's all they do in these movies. Yeah. Miss moments.
And I thought, okay, so that middle action piece that you guys were talking about, that was their like little Mission Impossible moment.
Right.
Like, oh, see, these new guys, know new things.
Right.
And so they I don't know what that guy explained.
He was like, oh, I have a plan. And then he just jammed the boot.
Yeah, I have a plan. I just
we override the jammer. Bang, computers. And they're like, yeah, all right.
Okay.
Oh, next generation. You guys are digital. I'm analog.
Let
me get my big watch. Beep, boop, 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 boop.
I could do math problems. Not as much.
I did like Dolph Lundgren. So I'm like, no, I bought that a while ago.
Yeah.
I look up the weather on it. So cute. Okay. In terms of, okay, I think the movie, these, all of these movies rest in such like an unhappy sweet spot between unsweet, sour spot, whatever. Between like, it either needs to go like super like hard R.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And just like, just people getting mowed in half and whatever. Again, I'm not like endorsing it. I'm just saying that's whatever. Okay. That's fine. Or they gotta go like super campy, ridiculous, like a cartoon,
right?
And then but it resides like in neither, and so it ends up being this like horrible in between.
And that's it's amazing to me that none of these movies have managed to like satisfy me.
Like, what's the point of having a PG-13 rating for this movie? Like,
no, why? Nobody is young enough to see this movie. Yeah,
no kid in eighth grade was like, yeah, I want to see some 60-year-old dude who doesn't know how to speak. Like, no, none of them. Like, just thinking about, you know, the people who are in the theater with us. Like, no, there are like no kids in there, really. I mean,
and again, it completely exposes the MPAA as nothing more than just a bullshit marketing hook. Because this was, for sure, an R-rated movie. Like,
mm-hmm. Right.
And they were able to put a PG-13. I mean, if an independent film with this much violence, even tried to, you know, go to the ratings board, they would be handed an R in a second. This movie is just as violent, if not more so, than all the shit that like I couldn't quite see in the 80s because I wasn't old enough yet.
Right.
But there's no blood, so it's PG-13. It's ridiculous. And then Stallone, I think, kind of says like, "Oh, we're holding back the violence for the Blu-ray." It's like, "Oh, so now you can market that as the uncut version. So now you can market a PG-13 and market the more violent R-rated one, like, fuck you guys.
Right, why don't you just
show us twice.
You know what'll sell more Blu-rays? If you show us the better movie first.
Yeah, just make the good movie, and then we'll want to buy your shitty Blu-ray.
Right, it's called The Raid 2, friends.
Right.
Just,
yeah, right.
I mean,
and they kind of did that on the first one. I think the first time around, they were, like, debating whether or not they were going to go R or PG-13. And they ultimately decided to go R, and so they added in all this bad CGI blood. I don't know if you guys remember the first one, but that, especially in the opening sequence, I mean, there's tons of just CGI blood because they made it violent after the fact, which you can't really do, guys. It doesn't work that way. And I'm not demanding that we see blood in this movie. I just think this movie should have been rated R. That's all. I think at times they sacrificed, some stuff for the sake of a PG-13. Not even like, oh, I wanted to see blood and gore and stuff. It was that they literally had to cut away so fast that the movie became overly busy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it had to be so chopped up.
No, and even what we saw was not, it's just, I mean, I think Ronda Rousey does an arm break at some point, which was like, all right, that's what
she, yeah, but right, then there just, she is, here you, we go. Yeah.
It's you don't even see it. You just hear like the arm break noise, and then they cut to something different, which is.
And who's the other guy? Ortiz? Somebody Ortiz?
I have no idea who that is.
Yeah. Tech guy?
I've never seen it.
Ronda Rousey.
You have Spanish dude.
Motorcycle, problem with authority.
Motorcycle guy, right.
And other guy.
And someone who's not white.
And I don't know what that guy's specialty was.
Yeah.
Did he do like a leap at one point?
Nothing. He was the one who had he's the one who had the gun that
he had a weapons expert.
But that was not during a fight.
Yeah.
That was just a demonstration.
That's not a gun that he ever used.
That makes him about as much a badass as Kelsey Grammer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Jet Li in this movie.
Oh, well, listen. Oh, Jet. I liked the scene during the Mission Impossible thing that you guys were talking about. I liked the idea of having Ronda Rousey walk out into traffic so that all the guys would pull their guns and they could see.
Yeah.
But what do they do with that information?
Nothing.
Now we know how many guns people have.
Yes.
Okay.
We know that these guys have guns.
But that had nothing to do with their mission, with how they planned what they were going to do. It informed nothing. It just showed that his security had guns.
Which we kind of figured.
He had more security than the president,
according
to the people in this movie.
Can we? I know I already talked about it before, but Ronda Rousey is so hard to watch in this movie that there was a scene. There's one scene with her and Stallone in the cockpit or whatever, and
it's great.
And I'm watching
it. Was she talking about family, that scene?
Yeah, and I'm looking at it like, wow, Stallone is actually acting his ass off here compared to her. Like, this is... He looks like an Oscar fucking nominee here. He's
taking that fifth grader to the hoop.
Yeah. Yeah, she was bad.
And she's...
Because even her delivery of men, which is like a recurring joke.
Yeah.
Even the delivery of that one word was bad. Like, that didn't work.
Men.
And I think we were supposed to laugh at that.
Was it funny? I don't know.
No, it's one of the plenty of jokes that are completely unfunny in this movie.
I mean,
in the entire three movies.
Every scene with Statham and Stallone is garbage. Yeah. I mean, it's very upsetting. Because you watch Jason Statham in the Transporter movies, one and two, and you're like, oh my god, he's such a badass. Yeah. He's so much fun to watch. And in this movie, he wears a beret and throws a knife and complains about stuff. I don't know.
Well, you know, there was a lot less... I was pleased to see a lot less skulls in this movie.
Sure.
Yes.
I mean, really just the symbol on the plane in his
progress.
Ring. A little bit less blues music.
Okay. I didn't mind the blues music.
But. Did you guys see the Rambo, not remake, but Stallone's in
Part
it?
Four.
Did you guys see it?
Yeah.
What did you guys think of that movie?
Yeah, that was okay.
I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
When he mows a guy in half with a machine gun,
right,
it's great.
Like, and so, you know, he's on the riverboat. He's like, you don't want to go to this dark... He's taking these, like, whatever, missionaries, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so that's, like, recent Stallone, right? Recent-ish, right? Like, why can't you make that movie?
Right.
Like, why can't you push the tone of this Expendable stuff into that area, right? Like, he's kind of playing the same character, right? That Barney Ross is, like, scarred...
really established,
whatever.
Though? I mean,
no, not really. But that's what he's trying to go toward, right? And he's scarred, and he doesn't.
He
want
seems
to, put
to be over Liam Hemsworth. I got that impression.
Yes, I think so. He's forgotten.
There's a guy who wants to die. Dog tags are jinging up there now.
I mean, how many times does Wesley Snipes have to keep saying that?
Jingle.
By the way, Liam Hemsworth had a knife kicked into him by Van Damme.
Awesome.
Roundhouse kicked into his
Simba,
chest.
You like Simba?
Oh, God. They should have brought him back. It's his twin.
It's PG-13, guys.
It's his twin.
I like Simba.
I like Simba. No, but just...
He could have been Claude Villain. It would have been the best thing ever.
Look, I'm sure there's another fictional Eastern European nation that he's the head of.
I'm going to write my Expendables fan fiction. It's going to be so much better than these garbage movies that I will keep going to see.
Yes.
If they make a four, I will go.
We'll all go together.
It's
and we'll
his
do
passion
a podcast
project.
On it.
It's his passion project. It's his Riddick is what it is.
But I don't even feel like he's passionate about it. Like,
I don't know why he keeps not making it then.
Because it makes money, you know? And he gets to like give his... friends roles, which is good. Again, I'm happy to see some of these guys acting in a wide release big screen movie. We're not going to see Dolph Lundgren in too many major releases anymore. We haven't seen Wesley Snipes in a while. I wish he would have been given more to do. So on paper, I like these movies. It's just that every time he actually writes and shoots them, they turn out shitty.
Yeah. And he's not learning. The lessons aren't being learned.
Not at all.
Unfortunate.
Not at all. I mean, I don't know, you know, where he would be getting any feedback, but I just feel like if there's any out there, he's not really paying attention to any of it.
Doesn't matter. The feedback he's getting is that the people in Russia love watching this stuff, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
People in China love it.
They must. That must be where they're making all their money.
So I'm going to ask the question that you asked at the end of Expendables 2.
Oh my gosh.
Podcast.
All right.
If there's an Expendables 4, who else is there in the action movie catalog to get to go into the, my answer is Michael Dudikoff.
Okay.
that's the one.
I mean, he should show up.
Yes.
It's only fair. I would
Lee
say
Majors. No, I'm kidding.
I would say Jeff Speakman, but he's like terminally ill. Kurt Russell still should show up in one of these, but like he's too good for it. You know, he's better than this shit.
Zeus,
Tiny Lister, he could show up. And again, that's part of the problem. Like for Expendables 1, they might have been able to get Kurt Russell before he saw what these movies are.
Yeah.
because they have yet to make a good one. I think they're going to have, although they got Harrison Ford, so they must pay a lot.
Yeah. Samuel L. Jackson.
Is he an action movie guy, though? Michael
Jai. Antonio Banderas really an action
movie guy? Yeah, I guess. Desperado. Like, Michael Jai White should be in one of them.
Be great.
But then he'll roundhouse kick somebody in the face, and then you won't see it. You'll just see him.
Yeah, exactly.
They'll cut away at the last.
Yeah, right. You'll cut away, and then you'll see.
We got this guy who's just amazing at martial arts. We're not going to give him anything.
Right. He'll just stand there. He'll shoot a gun, a water pistol.
I mean,
that's the joke.
At this point, you're looking at guys who are too big for these now. Because like The Rock, he's too big for this now. No. He won't do it.
Right.
Gina Carano's too big for this movie now, I think.
Kind of. I mean, she was already involved in Fast and Furious, which is like the A-list Expendables. It has become. And Kurt Russell's doing a Fast and Furious movie. So, but I can't even think of some other B-list. I mean, Seagal is still the holy grail.
But they won't get him because, didn't you say he's in an argument with the producer?
Yeah, Avi Lerner and him don't get along, so he's never going to be in one of these, I don't think. Which is just as well.
I mean, we could just rewatch the Kill Switch over
and over. He's just fat and ridiculous.
How would you feel? I don't want you to lunge across the desk
and
reach for my neck when I ask you this, because it's very personal. This is very targeted for you. How would you feel about your girl Zoe Bell being in one of these Expendables movies?
I mean, listen, I want her to get the work. I feel like it's beneath her because they're garbage movies. She is starring in a movie, the name of which I cannot think of right now. It's like one of two female Expendables movies that are... This one is out in a couple weeks. It's shot. It's her and Vivica A. Fox and two other people. And it has a bad name and it looks terrible and I'm so gonna see it.
Wait, is it about cowboys? Is it about lady cowboys?
I wish it was about lady cowboys. I don't remember what it's called. So she's kind of already doing a bad female Expendables. But yeah, I mean, I would say, sure, put her in one and then, you know.
That's a person I would think of.
Give her nothing to do
as
well. Well, it's, you know, they have these two female Expendables movies sort of in production. And this one clearly is like, I think it's even produced by The Asylum or whatever. So you know it's going to be garbage, like CGI explosions just shit. And then the other one is more A-list. I want to say the guy directing it is like the guy that made Legally Blonde.
Oh.
And there's no cast yet, but I know it's like, it basically sounds like Charlie's Angels. Like, they go undercover as call girls. Well, sure, we can't have female action heroes that aren't pretending to be prostitutes.
Yeah,
right. How else could we have...
Where do you keep your gun?
...a cast of strong female characters? We have to sexualize them in some way, guys. Come on.
Look, the only
strong... We have to dress them up in outfits.
The only strong female roles, obviously, are prostitutes.
Exactly.
But she has a heart of gold!
It's amazing to me, if you ever, like, look down the list, if you think of almost any actress at some point.
Right.
She has played either a prostitute or a stripper. Like, almost any actress. It's insane and depressing, so don't do that.
Oh my god.
you just blew.
I can't think of anyone else right now, which is upsetting Expendables 4, I hope they never make.
I know. I can think of so many people that I don't want them to use. I don't want them to use any of like the new...
No. Get rid of that fucking new class.
Yeah, get rid of them.
Yeah,
that's who Saved by the Bell, the new class shit. Ronda Rousey is totally the weasel of this movie. Yeah, they're garbage. And like,
but bring back Antonio Banderas.
Oh, for sure. He's and Wesley Snipes.
Yes.
And you can put Randy Couture in a coma, because I'm pretty sure he's been in one of the last three movies.
Yes.
Fine.
Bring back Terry Crews. Bring back Lundgren. You can sideline Jeff Lee. Yeah. Jeff Lee. Also Jet Li. Jeff Lee should not be in it, nor should Jet Li.
No more
church.
MMA, UFC. I mean, you can if you want to, but they got to be able to do
none of them can act.
Or like show them doing their thing.
Right.
You know?
Right.
No more like martial arts stars. I don't want to see Tony Jaa. I don't want to see Iko Uwais in this.
No.
Don't touch him. Leave him alone.
I don't... put Schwarzenegger in it, but don't let him say any lines from previous movies.
Yes.
Because that right there was the thing that I hated the most, I would say, about 2.
Oh, yeah. It was self-congratulatory.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
every 5 minutes there was a line from an old movie.
Yeah.
And this one won. It won. I mean, besides the...
1.5.
Yeah, 1.5. Right. So...
Focus the story not on Barney Ross. Please focus it on anyone else.
An ensemble. Again, and they're
not
like...
Not anyone else.
They're fairly... I don't even feel like they're major changes that need to be made.
Sure.
I mean, I feel like they're fairly slight changes that if you would just sort of do a couple things differently, the movie would be at least satisfying. It might not be good. It might not be great. It will probably never live up to its potential as an action movie fan, because I just sit there watching it thinking of all the other movies I would rather be watching with these guys in them. I was watching Wesley Snipes, just wishing I was watching Demolition Man, also starring Sylvester Stallone.
Yes.
But I just wish that, I don't know. I mean, it must be, it really is at the screenplay level, and, you know, the one thing that all three screenplays have in common is Sylvester Stallone.
What do you mean it's a problem? Lucky Ring.
It tries to be about this idea of, like, we're old and they're young, and at the end they're singing Old Man on karaoke, like, and that's how the movie ends, and they have tattoos, and they're talking, like, one of them made a fucking Captain Planet reference, and I felt like a grandpa.
I missed it.
Something about the other, Ronda Rousey, one of her fucking brilliant ad-libs, she was saying something about being one of the Planeteers. And I was like, oh, right, because she's a child and I'm an adult. I have no idea how old she is, but obviously she's much younger than me. But it's just weird to see adults referencing Captain Planet because they were children when that was a thing.
Yeah,
right now, this could change because I warmed a little bit to Expendables 2 after the fact. Right now, this was my least favorite of the series, but I'm happy to hear that you guys liked it more.
I don't think it's the worst one. Okay. I think the Antonio Banderas stuff really.
And the end set piece that was like happy. Saved it for me.
Yeah, it really did.
Both compelling arguments,
but it's still just two things.
What we've done with all of these movies. It's like you have to kind of pick and choose. I like this. Oh, and this was kind of cool, but on the whole, it's a fucking train wreck.
Yeah,
because like I keep going back to like with two, you've got that great moment where they all shoot the guy.
Rest in pieces.
Yeah, and they ruin it with rest in pieces, and then you realize, why were they in that town to begin with? In this town?
And they're like in an airport, in an airplane hangar or something in that scene. That whole sequence plays out. I have no idea. And again, I thought this movie was going to sort of solve, not solve, obviously there's a, you know, men movies about men, but the first movie had a female character who was basically non-existent. She was like the woman that Stallone had to save.
Okay.
Second movie improved a little bit by having them bring along, she wasn't a translator, but like, and she ended up getting to do a little bit of stuff.
Sure.
Mostly just around to be the woman. So now we have a woman who's actually a member of the team, but doesn't get to do anything. B is introduced wearing a very short skirt, and C at the end has to tell Stallone that she would fuck him. okay, we get it. You wrote this.
It did come up in two, and it's come up in this one too. It's Sylvester Stallone. If you listen to this at all,
he does.
Yeah, please tell me what. Yeah. What is the cell phone carrier of the Expendables? Like, how are they at 25,000 feet and able to get a cell phone call? Like, how are we?
I don't know.
We're flying 25,000 feet and you know, Harrison Ford can call you and have a perfectly fine conversation without cutting out.
Yeah, I don't know.
Look, it's the CIA. They can do whatever.
When Antonio Banderas did tell his little bit of backstory, you know, when he finally, like, opened up about that, I like that he pulled his little earpiece out.
I don't want anyone to hear.
Yeah. I kind of like, again, it's like
private.
A little character thing. Like, that's what this movie needs more of. Also, better action and better writing and just be better overall.
And
but other than that, I mean, it was great.
And more killing, right?
Aside from its general badness, this movie was great.
It was fantastic.
Yeah. I'm going to say, like, out of the entire series, all three of them, I think I enjoyed Antonio Banderas the most out of all.
He was pretty awesome. I really loved Van Damme in part two, but that's a close race.
But I think Van Damme has...
Joy of performance. Yeah, it comes down to joy of performance.
Van Damme has the advantage of just being in the movie more. So,
sure, yeah. That's true. That's true. All right, anyway, thank you guys very much for talking about Expendables.
This is fun.
You're
welcome.
See
you in another 2 years.
I love eating Burger King and doing all the things from the 80s that I love, like smoking indoors and having a horrible haircut and rolling up my jeans.
And wearing your beret.
Yeah, it's the best.
That's an excellent beret. Thank you guys very much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Boom!
What's that thing Wesley Snipes keeps saying? Jingling?
Yeah, jingling.